Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this time we're going to talk about adversity and how to handle it if it happens. And, you know, sometimes it's unavoidable. Adversity happens. Now, what should we do about it is what we're going to discuss. How should we handle it? How should we overcome adversity and keep going forward to a successful outcome? Mm-hmm. And let's see, I think that our first question is going to be, like we sometimes do, we're going to ask what it is. What is adversity, I think, is the main question we're going to ask, because we have to know what it is in order to know how to handle it, right? And, oh, I see we have lots of participation. Thank you very, very much for being here. And, this is a really, lots of excellent definitions. This is a really good one. Adrian says that adversity is unexpected obstacles to a successful outcome. That's a pretty clear definition. Thank you. Unexpected obstacles to a successful outcome. That's what adversity is. Yeah, we never expect it, do we? It's kind of like, well, we start out, we think that we know who's on our side and what we're going to do, and then something happens, an unexpected obstacle, and we can't be stopped by it. We have to go forward. We have to overcome it or avoid it or make it less of an obstacle. Mm-hmm. Holly says that the obstacle is usually generated from outside the group, but it affects the group. Good point. That the unexpected obstacle to a successful outcome, Holly says the obstacle is usually generated from outside the group, but it affects the group. For example, Ryan says a change in the law. Right. Here's another obstacle that comes from outside the group. And we'll talk about those first. Because, yes, a lot of people are saying, well, no, the worst obstacles come from within the group. But let's talk about the outside ones first. Since, you know, I've said this before, but this show is, of course, organic. It's not scripted, and it comes from whatever topics we want to discuss, however the conversation flows. So we're going to talk first about outside the group causation, and then maybe a little bit about inside the group too. Mm-hmm. And Ryan says the change in the law is an obstacle that comes from outside the group. You want to do something that was legal, and now it's become illegal. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, this is a very good point. Thank you for all of your participation. Sometimes the group goal, it's not an obstacle really, but it depends on how you want to look at it. The obstacle is that the group gets dissolved because of an outside activity, because whatever the group was trying to get done, whatever the goal was, has been handled. It's been done. The law changed, and now we don't have a group anymore because we don't have a mission. Our mission was accomplished. Yay! We didn't have to hardly do nothing. It was accomplished, yes. But that would be, in a way, well, not only an obstacle, it's a time for celebration, right? But it is, in a way, an obstacle to the group because it means the group doesn't need to be there anymore. It's a good point. I wouldn't have thought of that as an obstacle, but okay, yeah, that's a good point. If we're talking about the group and its dynamics. Mm-hmm. Sarah says that illness of the leader that throws the group into disarray. That's an obstacle. Illness of the leader that throws the group into disarray. That happens. Somebody gets sick. And they are really the driving force of the group, the person that's really pushing, the person that's really organizing. They can't do it anymore. And it throws the group into disarray. So we have to choose a new leader, don't we? We have to decide who it is that's going to put the time, which is often the main problem, and the effort into the organization, into the keeping track of the group, into leading it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, illness of the leader. That would be an obstacle. Mm-hmm. This is a good point quite a few people, Greg and others, are making, that you had an obstacle with adversity because the problem gets worse and becomes an emergency. Something happens that makes whatever the situation is, the problem, whatever the issue, we're going to call it an issue, the issue that needs to be resolved becomes an emergency. And therefore, you have to speed up or you have to go to outside to get outside help. Mm-hmm. The problem gets worse and becomes an emergency situation. It's an obstacle that happens with nobody's fault, usually. It happens from the outside, though. Yes, we're getting quite a few examples of that. It's a really good point. We have an example of flooding. Something floods, and you were trying to preserve it, or the building collapses. Mm-hmm. Several people are saying the disease starts to become a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Yes, you might be having a project, a discussion, a mediation, a workshop, a seminar, or something, that, and if some sort of a disease becomes pandemic, starts to spread, it is an obstacle that needs to be overcome. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. People are looking at this in two ways, and thank you for all of your participation. And I always say I learn something from these shows, and I do, because I wouldn't have thought about it in this particular manner, which is that's why we have discussions, right? People are saying that the obstacle, that because you have an emergency, something becomes an emergency situation, may be preventing you from meeting. Mm-hmm. The flooding, the building collapse, the spread of disease, everybody is sick. It prevents you from meeting. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily the group topic that has become an emergency situation, but the group logistics have become an emergency situation, and that is an obstacle to us getting together. Very good point that we need a spot to meet. We had it all set up. We had a seminar, a workshop, a mediation, something set up in a group arena, and even with an audience. A lot of times I do something with an audience, and it can't be used. It's an obstacle that needs to be overcome. And sometimes it is a last-minute emergency. Very good point. Didn't think of it in the meeting-type direction. Thought of it more in this is what we were trying to do, and now it has speeded up the process. But very good point. That's why we have discussions, so that we can learn things. Bois says the misfortune affects the group members. She says an example like an accident that several group members are involved in. Mm-hmm. Misfortune affects the group members, like an accident that several are involved in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or misfortune, Maya says, a misfortune that creates delay. Mm-hmm. An accident. Well, yeah, and if several members of your group have an accident, well, that goes to illness. People are saying, well, that's illness of the leader. Well, yes. But even if the person is not the leader, you participate with them, you like them, we've networked together, you might have to go to their aid in some way, right? Or at least have the group be lessened because of their absence, and they can't do whatever it was they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Misfortune affects the group members, mm-hmm. like an accident. Mm-hmm. Maya says it creates delay, and it is disheartening. Yeah, people feel bad. It's disheartening. Mm-hmm. But Steve and others are saying if you have a misfortune like that, the group will shift focus to aid the afflicted members. Mm-hmm. And that will, of course, it's an obstacle that needs to be overcome. We need to decide what to do. Mm-hmm. We need to decide how we're going to proceed. We need to decide if there's something we should do as a group or as individuals to help our participants that have had the misfortune. Mm-hmm. We need to decide how it's going to affect the group, if we're going to replace these people, or if we're going to wait for them to come back. It all depends, but these are questions that need to be asked, right, in order to prevent the adversity from really being an obstacle we can't overcome. Now, I promised that we would, yes, that people are going, how about, these are all outside factors, right? And a lot of folk are talking, thank you for all of your participation. A lot of people are talking about within the group an obstacle. Someone changes their mind and decides that they want to have the group go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. We have research that is directly opposite of what we thought it was going to be. Oops. We have research that shows that our opinion is, well, wrong. Our stand, so to speak, is wrong. Not really wrong, but that there is something to be said for the other side, maybe more than for our side. That's kind of an obstacle from within, isn't it? We found out that we might not be right, or we might not have the pragmatic side. You know, so sometimes there's no right or wrong, but there's a way of achieving our goal that is faster, easier, more economical. And we found that out, and we need to change path. We need to change course. Well, that's an obstacle that we have to talk about and overcome. Interesting point. People, thank you for all of your participation. Someone within the group doesn't do their part. An obstacle. They have refused to participate. They said they would do something, and they're just not doing it. I've had that. You ever have that, especially on a volunteer group, like a committee? Ever had someone who wants to be on the committee because it's prestigious and wants to get their name on the list and like that, but when it comes down to it and everybody has something that they need to do, and this person willingly volunteers for an assignment, says, oh, yes, I'll handle that, and then doesn't. Not only doesn't, yes, interesting point. A lot of people, Helen and others, are saying that not only do they not do the assignment, but you can't even find them. They don't respond. And when they show up at a meeting, they kind of just brush it off, you know. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Well, that's an obstacle. We need to go forward. We have to decide, right? If people are asking what to do. And, yes, you have to decide what you are going to do about it, because that's an internal obstacle that needs to be overcome. Whatever it is that was their assignment needs to be done, right? We want it. We need it. We can't go forward without the information, without the phone calls, without the, all right, I once had someone who said that they would do a website for an organization that I was affiliated with. And it never materialized, right? Now, this is an interesting point. What should you do about it? Well, it depends. Oh, yeah, I'm going to say it depends. People say, I say it depends all the time, but it does. It depends on the situation. Because can you come to a conclusion with this person? Should they not be part of the group anymore? Well, it depends how important the duty was and how they shirked it. Should we figure that this person is never going to come up with the goods and hire somebody or assign the task to someone else in the group? See, somebody internally has created an obstacle. We need to find a way around it. We need to talk to that person. After all, they're part of our group. And we need to find out what's going on. Are you intending to fulfill this obligation, and when? How about by next week? And if not, we're going to give it to someone else, right? Quite a few people are saying that sometimes the group internally, someone pledges a donation. They pledge money. And we can't really economically go forward without having that pledge in place, without being paid, so to speak. Yeah, got to talk to the person. That's internal. It's an obstacle. To explain that we can't go forward, should we try to fundraise somewhere else? Why haven't you paid? Huh? You see, you don't have to be nasty, but you got to know. You know, Kevin and others are saying also from internally that you can have unexpected opposition. Good point. Especially from a person or group you expected to be on your side, as he said. Unexpected opposition, especially from a person or group you expected to be on your side. Yeah, you pretty much thought you knew who was going to support you. But when it comes down to it, they oppose you. You've got unexpected opposition. They won't go with the ideas and the goals of your group. Yeah. Got it. That's a moment for negotiation, as we say. Yes. Unexpected opposition. Sometimes that happens. Usually not, because the people have formed the group because they are single-minded in their goal, just not necessarily in the why of reaching the goal. So, we've talked about adversity. We've talked about what it is and how it can come from the outside and how it can be generated internally. So, what are we going to do about it? That's the question that's being asked. What do we do to overcome the adversity? What are we going to do about it? We've identified it. We've gone, oh my, yeah, that's not so good. We have an obstacle that we have to overcome, an adversity, a mishap, an unexpected opposition, whatever's causing the adversity. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do to overcome it? Thank you all for all of your participation. Lots of participation. Brooke says, and this is my favorite thing to say, those who've been here before, and there are lots of you, and thank you for coming back. Those of you who are new, if you'd like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and all of the shows, including the most recent five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, what are we going to do about how to overcome adversity? Brooke says that you need to acknowledge and discuss the problem openly. I love it. Acknowledge and discuss the problem openly. If you just hide, which is, let's face it, the first reaction most of us have, oh my goodness, maybe it'll go away. No, it won't. You have to acknowledge and discuss the problem openly. I guarantee I've been doing mediations and workshops and seminars and negotiations for more than 30 years. Adversity never goes away. The obstacle never gets better unless you confront it and you do something about it. So we're going to acknowledge and discuss the problem openly. We're going to call in whoever has created the obstacle. Well, first we're going to discuss it with our group, right? We're going to discuss amongst ourselves what should be done and reach a consensus. And then we're going to go do it. And we're not going to just ignore it, because ignoring it just won't help. Yeah, George says that you not only don't ignore the other side, you don't ignore the obstacle, you need to create a plan of action to rebut them. You need to create a plan of action to rebut the obstacle, to rebut whoever is saying something opposite. That's what you do with your group, right? You get together and you create a plan of action so that you can overcome the obstacle and go forward, right? This is an interesting point that Sherry and others are making. We've talked about use of the media in the past. And you know, when I started this game some 30-odd years ago, media meant something traditional, and you'd have to really connect with a reporter, or really, you know what I mean? It would be a very kind of time-consuming and tedious thing to do. But nowadays, media is, of course, rather easily accessed, easily accessible. And Sherry and others are saying that you alert sympathetic media to champion your position in order to overcome adversity. To overcome adversity, you can alert sympathetic media to champion your position. Yeah. How about talking about it on all kinds of blogs and online journals and traditional too. I mean, there's nothing, you know, people are saying there's nothing wrong with the traditional. It's more accessible than ever. And that's true, because especially since most of the traditional outlets, television, radio, and like that, have online also, right? And even magazines and newspapers and things, they've got all kinds of ways to get their attention and get sympathetic. I'm going to call it press, but you know what I mean. Sympathetic media. It's not press anymore, really. But get the word out that you have adversity and that you are the more sympathetic side, that you're the one that the people should look to. You know, Edward and others are making a very good point, and you don't often think about this, but this is very, very true, and I have seen this. This is actually the truth, that you need to alert the officials creating the adversity. It may be an inadvertent reaction to a good law or regulation. That's an excellent point. Thank you, Edward. You need to alert the officials creating the adversity. It may be an inadvertent reaction to a good law or regulation. You ever hear about the law of unintended consequences? Yeah. Sometimes people go, yeah. Sometimes officials, lawmakers, whoever it is, this is a multinational global show, so whatever kind of an entity that makes laws and regulations, and then, you know, I'm in the United States, and in the United States there's all kinds of layers and all kinds of entities, not necessarily making laws so much. Well, yeah, I guess so, because courts interpret the law, but also regulations. There's all kinds of government entities and all kinds of local entities and county ones and state. You know, there's lots of layers. And most of them, in fact, probably all of them, are full of sincere people trying to make good laws and regulations. And it's possible, and I have seen this, that the problem, that the obstacle that has been created by the law or regulation was inadvertent. They never thought about it. They didn't know that would happen. They didn't know it would be used in that way. They didn't know that would be a side effect. You got to tell them. You got to say, look, this is what's happening. We need a modification. We need a revision. We need a reinterpretation. And, you know, in the United States, a lot of times people, organizations, groups that get together, they bring something to the court system, a law, a regulation that is having an adverse effect on them, so they can get a court ruling. Or you can get an administrative ruling. You can get lots of rulings. And this is true all over the world. Yeah, people are saying that they've got that system too, wherever they are. This is true. That it just depends. But you need to bring the problem, the effect, the side effect, to the attention of the proper authorities that caused it, because they might not have meant to. They just didn't think about it. And it would be not simple, nothing in this world is simple, but not a tremendous hardship on anybody else to make a modification. And they'd be willing to do that, especially in countries where officials are elected and we just talked about getting sympathetic media, right? Right. And yeah, because they are indeed obligated to the will of the people if they have to get elected. And the media can make a big difference. Yeah. You know, Hatsui and others are saying it's a real good point that you should call a council to meet with the adverse parties to work out an accommodation. Yeah, why not? Get together. We don't talk to only people that agree with us, right? It would be a very dull world if we did that, and we wouldn't get very far. So you call a council, good point, council, to meet with the adverse parties to work out an accommodation. You don't even have to really change your opinions, right? You just have to reach an accommodation, a negotiated agreement, to make the effects, to make the obstacle go away, to make the obstacle not stand in your way, and so you can go forward. The other side would probably like to, too. Go to meet with the adverse parties, a very good idea, because usually an accommodation can be made. And that's a lot of times where we come in, right, as the third party impartial. I do a lot of mediation, a lot of negotiation between adverse parties because, and I am the third party impartial. I'm not really the group leader, right, because I don't have an interest in either side. I'm the third party impartial. I'm the mediator. I'm the facilitator of the negotiated settlement. And it's very important to get a third party impartial because it prevents fights. And you could get an accommodation better like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's possible. You know, Hatsui says that she likes to have a council with the adverse parties without a third party impartial. Depends on the situation. It depends on how far away you are and if the obstacle is deliberately created, too. Mm-hmm. All these things have an it depends on them, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, Leo and others are saying you can redouble your efforts so that you can be the most effective when you have adverse parties or you have an obstacle that you want to overcome and it's been caused by an outside source deliberately. You can redouble your efforts so that you can be the most effective. Mm-hmm. And the most effective is the most, sometimes the most public, right? Yeah, we're getting back to waging a campaign. Yeah, a lot of people are using the word campaign. That you wage a campaign to have the obstacle not in your way anymore, to overcome the adversity by getting public opinion on your side. Mm-hmm. Or the opinion, it's an interesting point, not everything needs public opinion, right? The opinion of the rulemakers, the opinion of whoever it is who is important for the decision-making process. Mm-hmm. The good point, sometimes it could be corporate opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. Mm-hmm. Reva and others are saying to wage an internet campaign. I have seen it done. It can be very effective, as we just talked about, doubling your efforts so you can be the most effective. It needs to be done, people are saying professionally. I would say it's quite, and this is a good point, too, that if you're going to start an internet campaign, you need to be able to have someone devote time to it. Because you can't just start one of those and just let them fall flat. You need to be able to contribute on a regular basis, something of substance. You know, just reporting what you're doing in a flattering manner is not exactly something of substance. You have to show that you're having an effect, to show that you, what people can do to help you have an effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point that James is making. You can also, you know, we talked about Hatsui and we talked about calling a council with the adverse parties, which I think is a very good idea, especially if it's mediated. And James says you can arrange for a formal moderated public debate. arrange for a formal, moderated public debate. I'm going to say that depends, right? It depends on the issues. But it's a really good point. You would have to have confidence that somebody could represent your side well in such a thing. I personally have done it because I am an experienced public speaker. Arrange for a formal, moderated public debate. The question is, who's the audience, people are asking. Usually it is a specialty audience of decision makers so that people can understand your side and do something about it. It's an interesting point. People are saying mostly that's done by politicians when they're being voted upon. Yes, sometimes politicians who have the power to change whatever it is you need to change will indeed engage with the group. In this country, in the United States, especially the present president, Barack Obama, did some what he referred to as town halls. They were not exactly debates, but they were up and back questions and answers with a certain agenda. That's kind of a moderated debate. There was a moderator, and it was kind of formal, and it was public in its way. I mean, the public being an audience that was selected or permitted or vetted in some way. But, yeah, a formal public moderated debate. It would be good marketing, good media. It would eliminate adversity because it would, and also it would probably be capable of causing some accommodation between the sides too. James says, especially if the other side doesn't have anyone who wants to debate. It's kind of like a duel. You can challenge them to a debate, and then they go, oh, my God, I don't want to do that, and reach an accommodation. That's a tactic. Okay, I'll accept that as a negotiation tactic. Linda and others are saying that the way to overcome adversity is to not to give up. Yeah. She says that everybody has adversity. The goal is worth fighting for. Don't give up. Everybody has diversity. The goal is worth fighting for. Yeah, and I think that we can all agree on that, that when we strike adversity, we don't just run off. We find a way to overcome it. We find a way to make agreement, accommodation, to get the adversity settled and handled and overcome. You know, Taylor's saying a good point. And yes, I think it's a very good idea as a negotiation tactic, but also just because you want to know. And I have actually directly done this. He says to ask the adverse party why. Why are they adverse? Why have they taken that stand? And after you ask the question, and then when they answer, to really listen. Ask the adverse party why. And really listen to the answer. Don't just argue with them. You asked them why. Let them tell you. Really listen to it. And don't jump in and argue with them while they're explaining it. It's interesting to know why. I've done that. Why? Why? What? How could you take that stand? Why are you opposing this? Why? It's a good question. Sometimes you're really surprised, and it's something that could be accommodated, an adversity that doesn't have to be. You've created an adversity for someone else, and you didn't realize it. It comes out in the why. I ask why all the time. You know, quite a few of you are lawyers, aren't you? I am one, too. And quite a few people are saying that you never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Now, this is good advice. I didn't mean to say it was old. This is good advice that is given to lawyers. I happen to be a lawyer, and yes, it's good advice. Generally speaking, I think the advice of you never ask a question you don't know the answer to is something that we're taught when you do it in front of like a jury, when you do it in public in front of decision makers. I wouldn't ask why in a public debate, for example, because it would give someone too big of a platform and kind of give them the advantage in the debate. Mm-hmm. But I'd ask them why within a small group setting or privately. I'd like to know. But yeah, don't ask a question you don't know the answer to is mainly when you're doing a public presentation and you don't want the public, the deciding public, for example, a jury in a courtroom, you don't want the deciders to find out the answer to the question that is an answer that's not in your favor. Does that make sense? Yeah. I think the question of why is not for a public debate, but it's for a smaller group setting or a private question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Crystal said, and others are saying that Crystal and Ryan are saying that you should find similarities and then negotiate the differences with the adverse parties, and that you gather all the sides together and focus on sameness. That's kind of the idea, isn't it? A lot of times we have very similar ultimate goals, very similar things that we want to happen. It's just that we have different reasons why. And adversity is sometimes a misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes a wrong preconceived notion, right? Sometimes it's just when we discuss it, when we get together, when we create an ability to ask the why question, sometimes the answer is, sometimes the answer is, I don't know. That's not a good answer. Because what do you mean you don't know why you're against this? Let's talk about it. You know, the answer is always, let's talk about it. Let's get this together. Let's focus on the fact that we do want the same thing. We just have different ideas on how to get it, right? And that is really, and yes, I am. People are going, are you getting to the recipes? Yes, I am. That is really the reason why Recipe for Peace Now creates the convivial atmosphere with the food, right? And a lot of you have heard me say this before, but I'm going to say it again. The food, the getting together with a potluck or just some sort of food to make a convivial atmosphere so that we can talk to each other in a non-formal manner, that it is a tool for compromise, for accommodation, for negotiation. It is not because we are hungry necessarily. I mean, it might be dinner, but it's really a tool to get us talking, to get to the bottom of the why question, so that we can listen, because sometimes you got to get through the rhetoric, right? You got to, depending on what we're doing, you got to get to the bottom of it. You got to figure out what it is that's creating the diversity and how we can get away from it. So, and yes, I'm going to say this because I say it every time. I can prove it. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And I say this each time, but it's very, very important. If you're going to get a group together and there's going to be some sort of food, like even a potluck, these are kind of potluck recipes, but you can do a little bit less fancy if you want. But any time you have food, you must take a survey amongst the participants. You must ask in whatever manner it is that you've been communicating, email, phone, whatever, if anyone has a food allergy, a food prohibition, or religious prohibition to some sort of food. You don't want to make anybody sick or offended. This is supposed to be a convivial atmosphere. We would like to have a nice party. And so you're going to take that survey. You're going to find out if anybody has any prohibitions. And you're going to tell everybody, very, very important, that when you bring some sort of food, it needs to be labeled, not what it's called, meatloaf. No, it needs to be labeled what's in it so that people can make a valued decision, a true decision as to whether or not they can eat it. Like, look at the list of ingredients. Also, I think that as the host, and I pretty much think this because I hate to run out of food. It makes for a bad party. I think that we should have some extra food. We should bring some extra. And we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what on earth is a safe recipe? Well, it's one that does not have too terrible many ingredients. They're ingredients that my participants, your participants, would be familiar with. Now, I'm in the United States. I'm in the Northwest. And my people, my participants, are more likely to be familiar with these ingredients maybe than yours are. This is a global show. You have to decide on that. And also, they are ingredients that most people are not allergic to. So, our safe recipe this evening, now that we've gotten through all the fine print, because I know I say that each time, and thank you for all of your participation, and thank all of you for coming back, and welcome to the new people. Please come back. We're going to have a tomato and beef lasagna. Now, I am aware that a lot of people are allergic to tomatoes. Then don't do it. It's not a safe recipe. But also, you can see the tomatoes in this really obviously, and they're labeled. So, here we go. I don't usually do a lasagna, do I? I personally do not make the noodles. I buy them. You can buy them in just a dried lasagna noodles in a box in the United States here. It's inexpensive. It's easy to do. If you make your noodles, you're a finer person than I am, and your lasagna will be much more delicious. This is just a basic recipe. Add as you wish. You can add all kinds of nice things. Okay, so we're going to have pound and a half, maybe 2 pounds of ground beef. It would not be a safe recipe if you did half ground beef and half something with pork. You can decide on your people, because I've done this with half beef and half sausage, but beef is a safer choice. A nice big onion that we're going to chop up nice and fine. 2 cans, if they're 16-ounce cans, of tomatoes. Yes, you can use fresh tomatoes, then add some liquid. I don't use them because canned tomatoes are, again, readily available, and it's a lot simpler. Your lasagna will be more delicious if you use fresh stuff. 2 tablespoons of tomato paste. Mm-hmm. About 12 lasagna noodles, because we're going to layer them on the bottom of the pot and then put some filling and then layer again and then put some filling. So we're going to use 12 of them. Mm-hmm. At least I am. You have to look at how big they are and how wide and how thick, too, I suppose. One of those containers of ricotta cheese, it's about a 15-ounce. Don't use anything but ricotta if you can possibly help it. 2 large eggs. And 2 cups of shredded mozzarella cheese. Ha, there we go. You can add some parsley to this, too, if you like the color. Otherwise, it's a little bland. We're going to give it about 1/4 cup of chopped parsley. Okay, so now we're going to make the sauce, so to speak. We're going to get ourselves a nice big saucepan, and we're going to cook the ground beef and the onion, breaking it up with a spoon as you go along until the meat is well browned. It takes, about 5 minutes. Then we're going to drain out the meat and the onion, and we're going to discard the grease because we don't want the grease. But in the same pot that it's still kind of moist, right? We're going to add the tomatoes, juice and all, the whole can of tomatoes, the tomato paste, and we're going to cook it. We're going to heat it up to boiling. If you've got really big tomatoes in the the cans, and really you can use diced, the cans of diced, but if you've gotten a can of whole tomatoes, you should break them up so it's not lumpy. And we're going to simmer this, and we're going to stick the meat in it, the meat and the onions, could put them back in with the tomato, the can of tomatoes with the juice and the paste, and we're going to simmer the whole thing for about, oh, I don't know, we're making sauce, for about 30 minutes until it gets kind of thicker and all incorporated. We're going to stir it just occasionally. While that's simmering on the stove, the meat and the onion and the tomatoes and the tomato paste and like that, we're making sauce. While we're doing that, we're going to cook the lasagna noodles, which I think are coming out of a box and are hard and dry. If you have a better access than I do and you've got fresh ones, yum. But you cook them al dente. Seriously al dente, not so that you can't eat them, but not mushy at all because it's going to be baked. And when you cut into this, you want it to be fairly firm. You're going to drain them, and then you're going to rinse the lasagna noodles in cold running water, and you're going to stick them in a pot with cold water to cover them. You need the cold water because you want to stop the cooking process. It'll also keep them nice and firm. I don't know who taught me that trick, but it's a really good trick to know. One of my friends, one of you guys taught me this. You stick the lasagna noodles in cold water. It sounds stupid, but it will keep them really firm. Okay, we've got our oven preheated to 375. We're now going to make the stuffing, right? The cheese stuffing. We're going to mix together the ricotta and the eggs, and let's put some parsley in it, chopped parsley, until it's all nice and smooth and well mixed together. Mm-hmm. You remember our noodles that are sitting in the cold water? Remember our sauce, which is in the pot? We now have our cheese stuffing, right? We're going to drain those noodles, the lasagna noodles. I actually drain them on a towel. I'm so big on this, so that they're not damp at all. They're all nice and padded down and kind of sticky. We're going to drain them, and we're going to take a big rectangular baking dish, like a 13 by 10, is that a size? No, people are saying 13 by 9. Thank you. Hello. We're going to take one of those big dishes. I'm going to spray it with cooking spray, primarily because I hate it when the stuff sticks. I don't know if you need to or not, but I'm going to spray with cooking spray. And we're going to arrange half of the noodles, which I think is about six of them, right, which we had a dozen, on the bottom so that they kind of overlap so there's no space in between, so that when you go to cut this, the noodles are firm on the bottom. So arrange them overlapping on the bottom, six of them out of the dozen, half of them. Now we're going to take that ricotta cheese mixture, half of it. Actually, let's think about this. Let's put all the ricotta cheese and half the mozzarella. And then we're going to top with half of the meat sauce because if the cheese is on the bottom, it gets more firm, right? Right. So we're going to put all of the ricotta mixture and we're going to take half the mozzarella and half of the meat sauce all in there. Now we're going to cover it with the remaining six noodles, right? Overlapping so that it makes a roof, and we're going to, and then on the very top, we're going to spread the rest of the meat sauce, and then on top of the meat sauce, we're going to put the mozzarella. So what we've got is this is a very basic recipe. People are going, you need more layers than that. This is not a cake. No, this is a very basic recipe, and you all know that I think the faster and easier and less expensive it is, the better, right? Because I won't do it if it's not quick. You want to modify this and make lots of layers and make the cheese and the meat, and people are going, you could put sausage in it and vegetables. Absolutely. We've got some people going for chicken and things like that. Absolutely. Fantabulous. Go for it. I'm just going to stuff it with cheese and half the meat sauce and half the mozzarella, stick the lid on it of the noodles, stuff it, put the tomato sauce on the top, sprinkle the cheese on top. It's going to be basic, but it is going to be delicious. Modify as you please. Yes. And yes, you know, a lot of people accuse me. Anyway, so we're going to let me finish the recipe, and then I'm going to say something about spiciness. So we've got it stuffed, we've got it topped, we've got the rest of the meat sauce with the tomatoes and everything, and we've got the cheese on top. We're going to cover it with foil, because otherwise it's going to get too hard, and we're going to bake it for 30 minutes. We're going to take the foil off, and we're going to bake it until it gets all bubbly and lightly brown. It's about 15 minutes more. I think if you have the facilities to bake it, you bake it with the foil until you get to the point where you take the foil off. Then you bring it with you, and you stick it in the oven if you've got the facilities for the last 15 minutes with the foil off to make it all bubbly and brown and make the room smell fantabulous. If not, you can bring it all done as far as that goes. Yeah. The bubbly part gets all nice and hot and everything. Well, it's in brown, 10, maybe 15 minutes, same oven. And then before you cut it, first of all, it's tremendously hot. You don't want anybody to burn their mouth. But you should let lasagna and other things, pie-type things, and I know I say this a lot. I said it with the shepherd's pie recipe and like that. Let it stand for, oh, I don't know, for as long as you can. Not really. Let it stand for about 15 minutes if you can. Because the longer it stands, it'll cool off slightly, and it will be easier to cut. It'll come out in a better-looking piece, a more solid piece, which is always nice, and then you don't get the last ones kind of squished in the pot. So, anyway, that's the lasagna recipe. And, yes, modify it as you will. It's all of these recipes are basic, and they are to be modified as whatever your people like, whatever is your custom. I indeed, this is true, and people say this all the time, and thank you for all of your participation. I cook rather blandly, not too spicy, because I have condiments on the side, so that if people want to make this more spicy, they can. I mean, there's always Tabasco sauce, really. I mean, but really there is. If you want, there's always salt and pepper and stuff on the sideboard. That is obvious what it is. It's in its original containers. And you can use it, you know, you can use the Italian seasoning, like oregano and stuff, whatever you like. But it's sitting on the side. I don't put it in because I figure that this is the basic, and then you can add to it as you please. Yeah. And I really think that's kind of a good rule of thumb. Then everybody likes it, and they can add spice at will, whenever they want to. Okay. So, that's the safe recipe. Why is it safe? Well, no, it has dairy. This is true. People go, it's not that safe. It's got dairy, and it's got tomatoes, and it's got meat. But you've taken the survey about your participants, and you've labeled it, and it is something that everybody, all the ingredients are something that my participants would be familiar with. They would have eaten them before. So, we're going to consider that a safe recipe. And if you add pork, one must be careful because that has a lot of prohibitions to it, religious and personal. Now, this is the adventure recipe. It's definitely an adventure recipe because it has shellfish. And a lot of people are allergic to shellfish and have religious prohibitions to it, just like pork. Also, if you have people who cannot eat shellfish, it's not good to bring a shellfish dish like this because it is quite fragrant and it might not be a good thing if you have people with allergies or prohibitions. You wouldn't want it in the room. Okay, so it's a shrimp and rice. You know, I once called this a jambalaya in a group and people insisted that it wasn't. It's kind of a casserole. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's shrimp with rice and peppers, and it's very delicious. But it is, of course, the adventure recipe because it has shrimp and it has wine in it. Mm-hmm. Two things that a lot of people are kind of might be not capable of eating. Mm-hmm. So here we go. We're going to have a nice big chopped onion again. Four stalks of chopped celery, depending, the kind of big ones. Mm-hmm. A nice big green pepper that we're going to seed and vein and chop. We're going to do the same thing to a red pepper. We're going to seed and vein and chop it. 3 garlic cloves that we're going to mince up. People accuse me of using lots of garlic. You can use less if you don't like that much. 2 tablespoons of butter. We're going to have 2 cups. Oh, we've also got ham. Ham and shrimp. Those are 2 things that a lot of people won't eat or can't eat. 2 cups of cooked ham that we're going to cube. Mm-hmm. Be sure that it's cooked and cook it through first if it's not. But cooked ham. In the States, it's easily come by in a package, in all truth and honesty, and you cube it up. 2 cans, about 16 ounces each, of diced tomatoes. Also with the sauce, with the juice, undrained, as they say. We're going to use a can of vegetable broth, like 12 ounces. A cup of uncooked rice. Let's have a cup of red wine. If you don't want to use wine, you can use water, or you can use more broth. I think I'd use more broth. I do like the unsalted broth, in case anybody is interested, because you can always add salt. I'm going to add in a little bit of sugar, just because I like it to have a little sweetness to it, and I think it balances. I'm going to give a tablespoon of sugar, just regular sugar. And we're going to have 2 pounds of uncooked shrimp. Well, here you can get them frozen, in all truth and honesty. And if you do, you need to thaw them out and pack them dry, frozen uncooked shrimp. Whatever it is, it needs to be peeled, because there's nothing worse than having to peel something messy as you're sitting there. First of all, it makes a mess. I mean, it's unsocial and it's nasty, and it's ugly. Do not put shrimp with shells in anything. So we're going to peel them and devein them if they haven't come that way. I must confess that I will use a bag of frozen, peeled, deveined shrimp that you just thaw, pat dry, and throw in. And let's do a little bit of chopped fresh parsley again, just for the color. And also it's delicious, but really, but parsley's just good for the color, right? An eighth of a cup of chopped fresh parsley. So we're going to get ourselves a nice big pot, because we're going to do it all together, like a Dutch oven, one of those big pots. We're going to saute the onion and the celery and the peppers and the garlic in the butter. Might need a little extra butter. Until they're all nice and tender. So they're all nice, you know, until everything's softened and it's yummy and it smells really nice and it's all a bit added together. Then, to tell you the honest truth, we're going to throw everything else in except the shrimp. This is an easy recipe. We're just going to, you've got the raw things have been sautéed and cooked through, right? We're going to throw everything else in. We're going to bring it to a boil. The people asking about the ham, too. Yes, I usually do, because I've got nice thick cubes of the ham, and it kind of makes them all nice and soft and incorporates the flavor. If you think the consistency of your cooked ham is kind of soft and won't take to being boiled for like half an hour, which is this is going to do, then put it in halfway through. Okay, so we're going to add everything in. We're going to bring it to a boil. We're going to reduce the heat, right? And we're going to simmer it. How will we know when it's done? Because the rice is going to be done. That's the key to it. Remember the uncooked rice? It'll take about 25 minutes. You saute the raw. You throw in everything else except the shrimp and maybe the ham, which would be put in halfway through. But I put it in all together because, I don't know, my cooked ham is kind of dense. And reduce the heat, cover it, and simmer it until the rice is soft. Take 25 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. Now, the rice is soft. Everything is incorporated. It's all simmered. It's all delicious. It's all kind of reduced down because the rice has taken some of the liquid, right? And the simmering has taken some of the liquid. Yeah, all reduced down. But it's still got some liquid and it's still hot and it's still simmering. Now's the time to add the shrimp and the parsley. You add the parsley before then, it's just going to get funny. And you add the shrimp and the parsley and you simmer it uncovered until the shrimp are cooked through. That'll take you 10 minutes, right? Don't don't skimp on the time. I really like to make sure that seafood is cooked through. So, you cook, you saute the raw, you throw everything in the pot, you boil it, reduce the heat, simmer it, the rice is done. Took about 25 minutes. This leads you to believe that you could simmer it on a stove in the room, which would smell delicious if everybody can eat shrimp, and pork, remember that too, which is why this is our adventure recipe. You put the shrimp in about 10 minutes before it is done, because shrimp can't be cooked that long. Mm-hmm. And the parsley too. You stir it all around, delicious. But it is our adventure recipe because it has items that a lot of people have a prohibition to or an allergy. Yeah. So that is our adventure recipe. We've now created the convivial atmosphere. If we need a timeout, we can take a timeout. And speaking of time, I see that our time together is nearly up. My, that went fast. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. If you want to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. If you'd like to hear the last five shows, they're archived on the website at recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.